Welcome to the Rennie Podcast, where we talk about the real estate market and the people connected by it. Our goal is to empower you to make informed decisions and provide context for the real estate world around you. We hope that with every episode, you will become a little more knowledgeable and a lot more curious.
Welcome to the Rennie Podcast. I'm Ryan Berlin, head economist and vice president of intelligence here at Rennie.
And I'm Ryan Wise, our market intelligence manager and lead analyst.
And we are joined once again by none other than Sean Wentworth, realtor and advisor extraordinaire here at Rennie. You live and work in the Sea to Sky corridor.
Definitely.
Working from Squamish up to Pemberton. You've been a realtor for the past 20 years. You've been with Rennie for the past four. You have been President's Club, so top 1% of realtors in this market on multiple occasions. 14 times you've been a Medallion Club member, so top 10%.
Yep, I am definitely feeling old. I'm definitely
Do you need more
old.
Accolades
yeah,
as
no,
well?
No, we're good. Definitely feeling old.
So you know what you're doing. And
the rumor.
We're really happy to have you on.
Excellent. I'm glad to be here. Glad to see you guys again.
So it's funny. I looked. We have a list of past guests. And I remember recording with you previously. And I thought it was maybe a year and a half ago. But my memory failed me. So it was 4 years ago.
4 years.
4 years ago. So back then, so this was in the fall of 2021.
Yep.
So sales were booming.
Crazy time.
Crazy time. So we had, so that year, once that year wrapped, we had a record number of resales in this region. So it was 72,000.
Yeah.
We had 27,000 presales. Which is like, I think it's double. That's double the average.
100,000 transactions.
100,000 transactions. And then resale inventory by the end of that year got down to around 6,000. So, I mean, that was the lowest we'd ever had on a per capita basis.
Definitely.
Absolutely. There just wasn't much available and prices were skyrocketing. We have a very different market now.
100%. 2021 was incredible. Like you could barely breathe. You were just running from deal to deal to deal. And it was so easy. It was like, oh yeah, you have a listing. It's got four bedrooms. I'll take it. Like, do you want to see it first? But no, it was a crazy market. And now it's a grind. Now it's a bit more of a grind and trying to get out there and get more information to people. And yeah, a lot of undecided people out there.
Yeah, I mean, the dynamics across the board are different because interest rates also back then, the reason people were happy to take homes off of you without looking at them is that they were borrowing at sub 2%. And obviously now that context is quite different. We'll talk about the market today. There's a few things we want to cover in addition to the state of the housing market in Metro Vancouver and along the Sea to Sky corridor. We'll talk about what's driving action or the lack thereof. We'll review the latest Bank of Canada interest rate decision and what we think they should do with rates, because they're listening. I bet you they're listening.
I hope so. They don't seem to listen to too many people. So
they should listen.
I hope they're listening to you guys.
And then we want to share some thoughts on the new first-time buyer GST rebate that's been introduced by Prime Minister Carney et al. Let's get the ball rolling here. So as we touched on, the market is a lot slower now. We've been talking about this for months. Ryan Wise, why don't you sort of set the stage for us and give us some context for, you know, why we're saying the market is slow right now.
We've kind of chatted about this in past months, but really we've seen a big slowdown since the start of February, or perhaps January 20th, when someone was inaugurated down south. So the market had picked up last year, you know, October, November, December, January, we saw all four of those months, year over year sales increases. And then February hit, tariff talk really hit, all the threats, some of the implementation pullback, everything else. And consumers just pulled back. Like you said, Sean, there's so much indecision out there right now. And so sales have been really depressed for February, March, April, and now May. So last month sales were down almost 20% year over year, 34% below average. You know, there was a small month to month increase in sales, which is kind of typical between April and May. But really the story is that once again, it's just another month of buyers kind of sitting on the sidelines. It is a consumer confidence issue. Consumer confidence is lower today per the Conference Board of Canada than in March of 2020 when COVID first hit. And so we've got all these buyers kind of on the sidelines. We've got new listings keep coming to market. We've just had three consecutive months of more than 10,000 new listings. And so inventory is really accumulating. We're up over 25,000 listings, the highest of any month since September 2012.
That's wild.
Yeah. And so like, it's just been this, again, the inventory is really accumulating month after month as there's lots of listings, there's not a lot of buyers, and the market's kind of just stuck a little bit. So I don't know if that kind of tracks with what you're seeing out there, Sean.
Absolutely. We're seeing the same thing. A lot of indecision, a lot of uncertainty, people coming up. We're still getting showings. Like, there's definitely still buyers out there, you know, but they're coming to houses 3, 4, 5 times and still asking the same questions. And they're just very uncertain. They're confused. What's going to happen? Is there going to be a tweet in the middle of the night that's going to crash the market? Is there going to be, you know, something new that's going to be released by our own government? There's just so much uncertainty out there that people are definitely a little gun shy.
So when you say that people are, you're getting the traffic at the open houses, there are showings, but people are coming back with questions. Is it about, hey, yeah, when will all of this change? Or is any of it about the property?
From what we've seen, from what I've seen anyways, it's more about them just wanting to talk and ask questions to justify why they're waiting. I don't think they're questioning the house or the product. They're just, because there's still so much uncertainty in, are the rates going to come down? Is there going to be, you know, unemployment going to skyrocket? Like, what's going to happen? So they're waiting for the other shoe to drop. And while they're waiting, they're just asking questions to fill time. Because we've seen people come back, they said, clearly this is, you know, a couple times where it's like, this is my favorite house. I love this house. I'm like,
right.
Normally you write an offer when you say something like that, but then they'll book another showing and come back another week. And then they disappear for 3 or 4 weeks. And they're just, is it the right house? Are we making a mistake? There's no urgency, right?
There's no urgency,
pressure from other buyers, and they've got the time. And if they don't have a motivation of a deadline of some sort, they are taking their time.
And these are buyers, I presume, who are qualified, who can afford the homes that they're looking at, who presumably have a down payment or access to one, or have some equity that they're bringing with them?
Absolutely. Yeah. For the most part, we've seen they're all pre-qualified. We're getting a lot of information from them. They've talked to their bank, talked to their mortgage brokers. Mm-hmm. We're talking to their banks. We're talking to their mortgage brokers to make sure, because you don't want to waste your time if someone's coming in, they're not pre-approved. But definitely they've got the money, or they're getting money from family. Like, I've seen a lot of young people lately getting lots of money from parents to buy places, which has really shocked me in this market.
No doubt. The assets that they're drawing from are in some ways under assault, right? Whether it's in pure financial markets, or you look at the housing market where values have been fairly stagnant and there's questions about the trajectory of values.
Are they also looking at prices and wondering if, you know, if they wait, they might get a lower price? Like, we've been talking a lot about how prices have really held up. They've been pretty flat for the last couple of years. And I think there's probably some sentiment out there that given conditions, maybe prices, they're expecting them to come down. They're waiting for that.
Yeah, I'd say from what I've seen, probably 25% of the buyers think there's going to be a crash. Mm-hmm. They think the numbers are going to come down significantly, and they're waiting to see if that's going to happen. And then there's probably another 25% that are expecting the rates to come down a little bit more. So it might be more affordable for them if they can get the rate a little bit lower. But it's just a lot of indecision more than anything else. Just indecision, taking their time. No urgency.
Yeah, no urgency. I think that is the key right now. There's the uncertainty and a lack of urgency, and on the buyer's part, but then also on the seller's. So this is a question I have for you as somebody who you are working with clients, you're a boots on the ground guy, whereas we sit behind computers or microphones and talk to people like you. You know, with 25,000 homes available for purchase in this region, we're talking from condos to detached homes, you know, from Pemberton through to Langley. It's a lot, but we're not seeing prices move very much. They're fairly rigid. And I'm guessing that you're also just not seeing a ton of urgency on the sell side as well.
Some sellers, they've just sat for so long, they're willing to wait. They've got their number in their head.
Right.
Some of the guys that are sitting on new product, like guys that built spec houses, those guys are a little bit more motivated. But a lot of those guys are also looking at renting their places out right now. So there's a little bit of cash flow to carry the property.
Right.
There just doesn't seem to be that urgency. Our prices have held fairly steady up in the corridor. I think everything's up a little bit overall this year, of our numbers right now. And our list of inventory has increased probably about 20% in Squamish, but you go on to their sales report and we're seeing sales every single month.
Mm-hmm.
And they're similar to the amount of new listings, but we have slowly been creeping up the last 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
But I think we're at 279, 278, somewhere in there right now. I think we started the year like 225.
Right.
So we've creeped up a bit, but it's not crazy. It's not flooding.
It's slow.
Yeah. So that's something I've noticed. If you look at the whole Sea to Sky corridor, you take Squamish, Whistler, Pemberton combined, tracking a lot closer to 2024 than the broader region. Sales counts are like 3% up on last year. Inventory is only 4% up on last year. And it's kind of similar we're seeing like in Victoria and Kelowna. Some of these like secondary, more end user driven markets seem to be holding up a little better than sort of Metro Vancouver as a whole.
One of the things for listings that's kind of a bit deceiving too is a lot of the developers have started to put some of their listings on and they normally don't. So we're seeing a little bit of an increase in our volume, which isn't really an increase. It's just an increase in what's visible just because the developers are sitting on product that's not selling.
Is that completed and unsold product in Squamish?
Completed and unsold, but also stuff like pre-sales. We're even seeing them list some of their pre-sales, which they would normally, they didn't do in the past. They would just sell out of their show home. They'd tell all the realtors and it was just kept at complete control of the pricing and the information that was out there. But now they're actually posting them.
And so they're valuing that visibility.
Definitely valuing the visibility. They're looking for anything to get traction, to get more eyes on their product, because there's not a lot of people walking into the show homes.
We typically call it the pre-sale market because we're talking about homes that sell before they're built. But increasingly, we are seeing this trend to towards new homes that have been built. Enough were sold in the building to trigger the financing. So we see that the building's going up, but there are increasingly more homes available that are completed and empty. So now we're talking about calling it the new home market as opposed to the pre-sale. Probably more representative in this market. But Rye, what are you seeing in that new home market today?
It's quarterly data. So Q1, we just had just over 1,400 sales for the region, which is half as much as Q1 2024. Again, this is all consumer confidence, investors being sidelined. This is really, really low. And so that's the fewest new home pre-sales, whatever you want to call it, transactions in any quarter as far back as our data set goes, which is to 2012. There's just been even more of a drop off in the new home market than the resale market. Obviously, again, it's investors pulling back. It's just that lack of certainty about where the market's going to be in 3 to 5 years. And so we're seeing this growth now of completed and unsold condos, as so many of these projects that sold in 2021 that started building in 2023 are now being delivered. And, you know, some units either didn't sell or got held back. And now they're kind of completing into a market where there's not a ton of absorption. And so as of the end of Q1, we have it at just over 2,500 completed and unsold condos, just condos, which is the most we've seen in a decade. And we expect there's another 2,300 unsold homes that will complete this year. So depending on how absorption looks, we could be, you know, I think we're forecasting around 3,700 by the end of this year, if we kind of stay on the similar pace of absorption that we're at right now.
Yeah, so the number, like in a historical sense, those are large numbers, but it also, I mean, you touched on it, during the intro here, we talked about it. We're talking about a record number of housing completions that we're seeing now, because it is that wave of homes that sold or pre-sold in 2021. I would say, you know, all else being equal, we should expect an uptick in that completed and unsold inventory. But to your point, Rye, we are expecting that to continue to rise. For all of us who work in the industry, we're very sensitive to interest rate decisions, the language around them from the Bank of Canada. We care deeply about where interest rates are and where they're going. So the Bank of Canada met at the beginning of June 4th, I think. At that meeting, decided to hold their trend setting rate at 2.75%. So for context, that is right in the middle of their desired range, their neutral range, where they see monetary policy not having an expansionary effect or a restrictive one. So that range goes from 2.25 to 3.25. So it's right in the middle. So, and obviously way down from 5%, you know, a year and a half ago. You know, as part of their release, when they made the announcement, the bank said that uncertainty about tariffs, US tariffs, remains high. The Canadian economy is softer, but not sharply weaker, I would say, yet. Core inflation measures are currently a little unexpectedly firm, even though headline inflation came down, and Rye will talk about that in a sec. So for the bank, the economy is sending mixed messages. They're finding it very, very difficult to forecast under these conditions because we don't have all the information we need as it relates to U.S. economic and trade and tariff policy. So they chose to stand pat. What are some of your thoughts, Rye, on that decision in light of the data that we do have?
I don't think it was a big surprise. I think consensus was they would hold. I think I'm on record on TikTok as saying that they would hold, but they should have cut. So from my perspective, inflation overall at 1.7 is in check. Yes, core measures have creeped up over 3%, but we get this buffer for the next 12 months of the removal of the consumer carbon tax means inflation will be about 0.5% lower than it otherwise would have been for the next 12 months because of the math. So there's a bit of room there for them. The domestic economy, pretty weak. I don't see a lot of demand side factors pushing up inflation. And the labor market, relatively weak. We've been talking about how it's kind of just been getting a little bit weaker every month for the last 2 years. It's like a frog in a boiling pot of water. There hasn't been, you know, a big spike in unemployment or the unemployment rates. There hasn't been like mass layoffs across the country. It's just been sort of a weakening of the labor market. And that's continued right into May, where the unemployment rate hit 7% for the first time since 2021. If you exclude COVID, it's the highest since 2016. Tariffs now are, other than sort of steel and aluminum and the auto sector, are much more restricted. CUSMA compliance is way up on our exports. And so overall, I don't expect a ton of price pressures. And kind of all of that is to say that I think they should have cut. I think they should cut in July because I think we're going to get a few more data releases showing a little bit more weakening. I think the time really is to cut.
Looking for a new home today? We've got the largest variety of move-in ready homes in one easy-to-use shop. Search by city, price, or size and find your forever home. All move-in ready, all new, all in one place. Start your search today at movein.rennie.com.
We've talked about this before, but the bank was slow to respond to the price pressures during the pandemic, and inflation really ran away on them, right? Peaked at 8.1% in the summer of 2022. Seems like in some ways a distant memory, but it wasn't that long ago, right? Yeah. I mean, we were on the verge of panic. Inflation, though, is largely in check now, but I think the bank is really hesitant to be too supportive in their approach to managing inflation specifically. It makes sense, like as you said, Ryan, the consensus was they weren't going to cut, and there's no talk of an increase right now. When you do look at some of those underlying economic metrics and features, those numbers have been weak for a couple of years now, right? So the hope is that rate cuts are on the horizon. When we have the data 6 months from now, we look back and we say, oh, we are in recession right now, right? You know, and the bank's looking at all the, we're just three schmoes here sitting around with microphones, but they've got reams of PhD level analysts who are aware of these things. So it'll be interesting to see how we progress through the year.
I think they missed the boat. I think they should have cut from this industry. I'm looking at what all the developers are doing, and all the developers seem to be pushing off their launches. Like there's a lot of big projects up in the quarter that have just paused. One's paused to 2027 now. Another one's paused to the fall. Lots of people are just taking a step back because there's too much uncertainty. And for them to hold the rates, I don't think they're seeing what's happening, because I know a lot of the trades, especially in the construction, they're all looking at, like, okay, where's the next project coming? They don't know what their next job's going to be. You actually get guys submitting quotes now. Before, you just, hey, can you start Thursday? Yep. And they just start and they bill you. But now there's more availability of that. And I think that's going to be something that really trickles down, especially into the fall, if they don't see any, some big changes over the summer here.
The decision to build is preempted by the ability to sell or pre-sell, right? So, preceded by. So we know since that sort of apex of 27,000 pre-sales in 2021, which is now manifesting as record levels of completions, the number of pre-sales have come off in each of the 3 years since. The last 10 years, I think the average is about 15 to 16,000 pre-sales. And we were at last year, sub 10,000.
Just under 10,000.
Really?
Yeah. And we're on pace for half that this year.
So you look at it and we know construction levels are going to come down. So we are going to find ourselves.
And they started too. So 2023 was a record year for starts, came off in 2024, year over year through 4 months this year, they're down 25%.
Yeah.
So if we just carried on at this 25% level, that'd be the fewest starts in a decade.
For this year, right? And then we're talking about next year's construction, and the year after reflecting more recent pre-sale counts, which were lower than what is driving construction today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think another thing that I've seen with a lot of the guys in construction is, you know, 2 years ago, they couldn't find a laborer to sweep a floor. Mm-hmm. Now they put an ad and they've got 20 guys applying.
Right. Yeah. Right? That makes sense.
People applying like, two, 3 years ago, it's like, okay, we'll start, but it's going to be at this rate. This is how high we want. This is what we expect. And I'm not doing this, this, and this. Like, they were dictating to you what their terms were going to be hired. And now you've got guys to pick from.
Yeah.
Which is a completely different model than where we were.
Yeah. And, you know, a too tight market, whether it's the labor market or the housing market or whatever, brings with it its own set of problems. Mm-hmm. Balance is generally good, but the pendulum seems to have swung. And it goes back to the uncertainty, the lack of urgency, buyers on the sidelines, ready to buy. So I think that's something to think about as you look forward, is we have buyers who financially are prepared to transact. Mm-hmm. But there's a mental / emotional hurdle to get over. So
Definitely. We
know that those people are here. So when you look ahead and you say there's going to be fewer homes completing going forward, the demand is still there, mm-hmm. pent up perhaps now. So we're looking at this window. I think what we're seeing right now in our market, the way it looks, the shape of it, all of that, is a somewhat fleeting phenomenon, because I think it's going to look very different a year and 2 years from now.
Absolutely. I think the longer this goes where we're at now, even with our current interest rates, like the current interest rates are actually fantastic. If you look at the past 25, 30
years.
They're
really not bad at all.
They're actually not bad, but people are so used to this 1.5-2% mortgage rates. Now they're like, okay, well, let's wait until it comes back down. But they have the assumption that it's going to go back to 2%. Mm-hmm. And the longer this goes and people finally realize it's not going to 2%, we'll see them coming back, because they're out there. We're still getting calls for showings. Like, there's lots of buyers still.
It's like a be careful what you wish for thing. If we were to see sub 2% rates to come back, something very bad has transpired.
Yeah.
Right. The only reason we saw those in 2021 was we had this once in a 100-year phenomenon, which was a pandemic, and it was a unique response. And who's to say we would respond the same way, you know, next time as we did last time? So that aside, you know, you'd see rates as low as that when the economy really, really needs a nudge, right? So we're probably talking about a situation where you have more people who are unemployed. President Greg Zaddy says that we're not getting yesterday back. And I think that's a good example of it. We're never going to see 27,000 pre-sales, 72,000 resales, or sub 2% 5-year fixed mortgage rates going forward. So we need to detach from that particular context and just be prepared for the future to look more like it does now. You know, we have a new federal government. They've talked about injecting some life into the market, both on the construction side, financing side, but also to get more first-time homebuyers in. Mm-hmm. So they have introduced the first-time homebuyers GST exemption as of May 27th. So as of that date, homebuyers, if you've written a contract, like a pre-sale contract or a contract to take possession and occupy the unit, from that date onwards, you're exempt from paying GST on the purchase price of those newly built homes up to $1 million. And then between $1 and $1.5 million, the rebate is linearly phased out. So when you're at $1.5 million, no rebate. I think we all like the idea of it. Any thoughts on maybe the efficacy or the scope of this program?
I think it's a good idea, generally speaking. I think anytime you set a price cap, you need to index it. So if you say, oh yeah, we don't want to include luxury homes, we're going to set a cap of 1.5 million. That number becomes less and less effective over time. So what you want to do is index it either to inflation or to benchmark prices or something like that. So there was an old GST rebate that basically became useless because it was introduced in 1991 at 1991 prices. And so, like, I had to look up the terms of it because it was so out of date. But in 1991, there was a cap of $350,000 and then a linear phase out to $450,000. So in 1991, you could buy a brand new detached home and get a GST rebate. And in 2024, only a handful of condos, most of them outside of this market, were eligible. And it was a smaller one, so it was up to 36% of your GST, not all of the GST like this one.
So the maximum rebate there was
six grand. Yeah.
$6,000.
But the point is, like, it applied to almost the entire market at that time. Yeah. And then because they never changed the cap, it became less and less effective every single year, to the point where it was not effective at all.
Yeah, you ran some numbers, and, you know, essentially almost nothing is transacting under $350,000 as far as new homes are concerned in this market. It's, you know, 1/5 of 1% by your calculations, right? Mm-hmm. This policy originates with the federal government, so it applies nationally. There's no texture to it going east to west, north to south, right? So very different markets. If you look nationally at the average home price, so it's just, this is like a very crude measure because it's across all types and all markets. The home prices tripled between 1991 and where we are today. And in Metro Vancouver, they quadrupled.
And this is now, the new cap has tripled the old one, effectively. 350 to a million.
Right. You can argue that that kind of moved in line with what we saw nationally. But to your point, Rye, indexing this so that there is movement year to year. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest, too, that you put this in place and it can go in both directions. It can go down. It can go up, depending on what values are doing. How effective it will be in driving demand is up for debate. If we look at our pre-sale data, obviously we represent, you know, dozens of developers who are building all types of homes, wood frame, concrete, townhomes across Metro Vancouver. 20% of our buyers over the past 24 months were end user first time buyers.
Yeah, which is an important
under $1 million
caveat, because it doesn't apply to anyone who's buying for investment purposes.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So 20% of our buyers, under a million, end user, first time home buyers. So they're exposed to kind of the maximum rebate under this program. The Conservatives, part of their platform, had proposed a full exemption from GST up to $1.3 million for any buyer of new homes. If you're really looking to kickstart a market, if that's what it's about, if it's about trying to get people into homes that they're going to live in, raise a family in, or use it to then have a family and move up, the argument for a broader application of the exemption is very easy to make. It was 80% of our sales over the past 24 months were under $1 million. So for all types of buyers. For buyers under $1.5 million, if we were looking at a little north of the 1.3 the Conservatives proposed, the cap here for the current program, that's 95% of our buyers. You know, the new federal government is doing a lot very quickly. My hope is that we can add some nuance to this type of a policy going forward to make it really work for Canadians across all markets.
It's confusing the way it was rolled out. I mean, everybody's like, oh, it's up to $1.5 million. Well, it is, but it's that linear.
It goes to zero.
It goes to zero all of a sudden when you get up there. And it's not 50,000, like at a million, it's $50,000 rebate. But at $1.1 million, it's not 50,000. It goes backwards. Yeah. And so I think the way it was rolled out was a little confusing for sure. A lot of people originally came out like, oh, this is going to be great. And then they're like, wait a minute, this doesn't really work.
So are you seeing, though, because obviously at these price points, we're looking at the Sea to Sky market, at least on the multifamily side, would be less than $1.5 million. Have you seen any in kind of increased traffic to sites or buyers in general saying, hey, I'm feeling like maybe my purchasing power is a bit expanded here because of this program? Like it is breathing some life into the market, or?
I haven't seen anything, to be honest.
Right.
We haven't seen anything. We've heard talk from other realtors. We've heard talk in the community of it. You know, it's going to be stimulating, but actual boots on the ground, we're not seeing it. There's still just so much uncertainty with everything else that the first time home buyers are going to be, you know, even more hesitant because they're the ones whose jobs are going to be on the line.
I think that's a great point, actually, because I think in a more normally functioning market, this policy can be, you know, achieve a certain level of effectiveness. It's not enough right now to get people over that hump of being concerned about their own job 6-12 months from now, or the risk that rates might go up, or being concerned that they won't go down enough for their liking. We don't know what's going to transpire in the near and medium term as it relates to the extent of our trade with the US, our relationship there. Yeah, I think until some of that stuff is cleared up, it probably starts with the relationship with the US and everything else kind of falls in line. We're not going to see a big impact from a policy like this.
Just a little side note, is there a realistic chance that we're going to see any stability in the next 3.5 years from our relationship with the US? It can change literally with a tweet in the middle of the night.
So the thing is, everyone agrees, or almost everyone agrees, that they're going to drive to a new trade deal. So CUSMA expires soon. We're going to do a new trade deal. But if you don't honor the last trade deal, who's to say you're going to honor the new trade deal?
Well, that's it.
Yeah. So I think there will always be a heightened level of uncertainty, especially for us as Canadians. Our sovereignty has been threatened and there's been a huge response across the country. So I think it's a case of, you know, once bitten, twice shy for sure in terms of how Canadians respond to this current U.S.
Absolutely.
Administration.
I mean, until Congress in the U.S. steps up, I mean, I don't know where they've been for the past 4 months, but everything's in executive order now. As long as that's the playbook, then we're not going to feel very secure and things won't feel stable. We can cross our fingers though, right?
Yeah.
Here's hoping. Here's hoping. Hoping for some calmness.
There's a lot we can do at home though. So if we focus on ourselves and...
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely. There is. Yeah. Okay. So next up our Beneath the Headline segment, where we find a headline from the past month that, to put it gently, could use a little additional context. You found an interesting one, Rye.
Yeah. So we already talked a bit about the labor market. So the one I found is that Canadian unemployment soars, driven by immigration more than tariffs. So, you know, we already said it's been sort of a slow and steady increase in unemployment, the unemployment rate for the better part of 2 years. This article has this clickbaity headline, and then the first thing they mention is the unemployment rate increased from 6.9% to 7% last month, which again, I think, you know, it's not that unemployment is soaring, it's that it keeps getting a little bit worse every month. It's still something to be concerned about. And there is some merit to this idea that immigration is part of it, because for the last couple of years, our population has grown a lot faster than our labor force can accommodate. That has slowed down as well quite a bit. And so I think now we're seeing is, you know, it's a weakening labor market, but I think it's one where the headline doesn't do the labor force data or at least justice.
Or maybe they were asleep for 2 years and they just woke up. They thought we were at, you know, 4.2 and we're at 7. We have a question from a listener, Imani in Vancouver.
Hey, Ryan and Ryan. This is Imani from Vancouver. I'm really enjoying your content, but I'm curious about your thoughts on housing being so out of reach for so many of us. Do you think policymakers should be focused more on pushing prices down or building more affordable housing options?
So there's a few things I think. First of all, I know there's been a lot of talk about this. Our new housing minister kind of made this comment, and there's been a lot of people kind of chime in on whether or not prices should come down. And I think ultimately policymakers shouldn't be focused on price, but more on creating the conditions to allow for more supply. Ultimately, I think what we need is far more housing supply. And so I think creating the conditions to allow for that is really what all levels of government should sort of be focused on. In theory, you can get better affordability without prices coming down, if incomes are rising quickly enough, if interest rates come down. Prices have held up. They ran up so much and they have held up that affordability is much worse today than it was in, say, 2020, 2021. That's absolutely true. But I think for policymakers, it's much more about creating the conditions for more supply.
2/3 of the electorate is a homeowner, right? So I think there's a political reality there that is not tenable. I agree with you, Rye. Prices are an intersection of a whole load of things that are happening on the supply side for any market, including that of housing, and on the demand side. You know, the provincial government here has done some things to try to induce new supply. We have housing targets. We have the TOA legislation that looks to increase density around transit. We have the small-scale multi-unit housing policy, which looks to bring density to single-family neighborhoods. We said at the beginning, like, none of those on their own were going to solve the supply issue, the long-term supply issue, but it's opening up doors for new supply that didn't exist before. And I think also looking at, to your point, increasing incomes, productivity, how do you create incentives for businesses to invest in capital and technology, increase that productivity, which will translate to increased wages.
And there is a push from the new federal government to increase productivity in construction. So whether it's prefab, modular, mass timber. So I think these are some good initiatives. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And generally, to your point about creating productivity and increasing incomes is a great way to improve affordability across the board.
I want the policymakers just to get out of it. They're in the way. There's so much red tape. There's so many different things, like just in the last 4 or 5 years, there's been so many different things added to the building code, things being fire compliant and this compliance and something else compliant. The amount of things they've added have just pushed the prices up.
Yep.
And then some great policy decisions. Let's try and get, you know, smaller houses or get multi houses on a smaller lot. But how is that rolled out? You still can't get an answer from the District of Squamish on how to do a fourplex on a single family. They're still trying to put you into a different building code.
So are you not seeing much of that type of development?
We're seeing it. We're seeing people apply for it. We're seeing applications in. We're seeing a couple have actually started building. But then we've seen other ones where they've started and the neighbors have sued them and now they're 9 months in court trying to figure out. And they're saying, well, no, you've gone against something that was registered on title. So the policy was a great idea, but it wasn't followed through with proper knowledge for every single market. They did a blanket thing across the whole province, basically. And Mm-hmm. It works in one neighborhood, but it doesn't work in another neighborhood, but there's no way to distinguish it. So everybody's running around in circles and yeah, just too much red tape. Just get it out of the way. I've never seen the government do anything successfully. Okay. So in my opinion, they need to stay out of the way and let business do it. There's got to be guidelines. You can't have developers running crazy. I get that. But you can't have somebody telling somebody else how to do something that's never done it before.
Yeah.
It just leads to more chaos, no, in my opinion.
Well, no, you know, and I think you make a good point too, because our model for adding housing supply, we have housing that is a quasi public good that's we lean on the private sector to develop. So that's how things operate here. And I think for the better. But where we've gotten into trouble, to your point, is layers of red tape, regulations,
and fees.
Fees, taxes, which just really increase that cost of delivery. Timelines are extended. And I think when you look at all of this too, it's how do you create a sort of a quilt of policies that sort of nest from the federal through the provincial to the regional or municipal levels that are conducive to bringing new supply to the market all the time, because we see development happen in fits and starts. Mm-hmm. And so we get kind of yanked back and forth where we opened today by saying, hey, we had 6,000 homes available in resale inventory just a few years ago. That's up to 25,000. I'm not saying policy should have changed to 6,000 or should change to 25,000, but we had record pre-sales a few years ago, record construction. Now we know that's going to fall off. So we're just going through these waves instead of reacting to a feature of the market that we don't like and implementing a policy to, you know, hopefully address that. It's stepping back and saying, how do we just broadly create conditions for the continued sale and development of new housing?
I'd love to see the levels of government all get together and figure out how to work together to figure out how to implement stuff that makes it more affordable for us, instead of reacting politically to something mm-hmm. and then putting a policy on it because you're reacting to a political issue. Let's come up with a policy that makes sense to drive us forward. How do we get to a point where we can work together with all different levels of government to make things run smoother, instead of like, well, how do you react to, they've just made a statement and now we have to fit it into our town versus, or our municipality or our province.
We have had years and years and years of trying to fix this problem and that problem. And you put your finger on one hole and another hole starts leaking water.
The economy has definitely shifted. And I think all of our policymakers at all levels are taking it quite seriously because they know it's going to affect them politically. There might be an opportunity now to try and figure out how to get them all together so we can be all marching in the same path.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, thanks to Imani for that question. That's probably the most lively discussion and response that we've offered up in response to a listener question. So thanks for that. We'd love to answer your real estate questions. You can either email us at intel@rennie.com or leave a voicemail at speakpipe.com/therenniepodcast. And we'll try to respond in our next episode. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I know
you
it's
guys.
Been 4 years. We always love having you here.
Love
Great
being
discussion.
Here. Yeah, absolutely love being here. Hopefully it won't be 4 years before I come back this time. Yeah. But it was definitely a lot of fun being here, guys.
Right. We'll see you again soon. Yeah.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning into the Rennie Podcast, where we share our passion for homes, housing, community, and cities. We hope that today's episode sparked the same curiosity in you that drives us every day. If you enjoyed the conversation, don't forget to subscribe and follow us on your favorite podcast platform. And if you have a moment, we'd love for you to leave a review. It helps others discover the insights, analysis, and perspective we bring from the Rennie Intelligence Division. For the latest market updates, be sure to register at rennie.com.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie Podcast. If you'd like to learn more, all resources mentioned in the episode can be found at rennie.com/intelligence. To be the first to receive this information, register for intelligence updates.